Welcome to the Kings Island Central Podcast. KICentral.com is Kings Island's ultimate fan site. Now, here is your host, Robbie Zerhuizen.
Welcome to the Kings Island Central Podcast. I know it has been several months, almost a year since our last episode, but we are back and we're going to recap the 2019 season at Kings Island. Joining myself tonight is Brad Perdue.
Hello.
And Evan Duffy.
Hello.
He posts on KIC under the username Delta Flyer. So tell us a little bit about yourself, Evan.
So I'm an engineering student at UC. I go to Kings Island a lot, mostly just to get a meal and ride Vortex, rest in peace. outside of that, I just do a heck of a lot of schoolwork.
So you're still in school?
Yes, I'm finishing up my last semester right now.
Where are you going?
UC.
Okay. And what's your major?
It's architectural engineering. It's kind of a hybrid between architecture and systems engineering and structural.
Wow.
Right, yes, up my field.
Yeah.
For those of you that don't know, I am an architect.
You guys could have your own podcast. Just talk about that stuff, couldn't you?
Yep, probably.
So do you consider yourself a coaster enthusiast?
Yeah, I'd say so. I've been an ACE member for the last 2.5 years. That was kind of precipitated by me really enjoying my time with Vortex, and it kind of just blossomed from there, and I've been trying to get my credit count up and kind of go to different parks and do all the normal enthusiast type things.
So how long have you been going to Kings Island?
Oh, I can't even remember. I mean, when I was a kid, my parents would bring me there. We lived in Dayton, so it was, you know, only an hour away. So we'd come down maybe 3 or 4 times a year. When we had passes, it might be more than that. But, you know, it was a big part of me, my childhood growing up. And then when I started going to UC, I started going a lot more because I only live like 15 minutes away.
That's good.
Cool. So how long have you had a season pass?
I've had a season pass since my junior year of high school. So that would be 8 consecutive seasons. I think maybe that's 7.
So I heard you mention Vortex a minute ago. What is your favorite ride in the park? And maybe we need to exclude Vortex at this point.
See, that's where it kind of gets difficult. It always has been Vortex.
Really?
Yeah. There's just something about it that I just kind of have loved. And I remember my first, you know, memory of it was my mom's friends took me to the park, and it was just me and them and their kids. And Vortex was the only thing about that trip that I remember. And I remember just staring at the floor of the car because I was so afraid of going upside down. So, you know, that's a really vivid memory for me. And that was really my first, you know, it's my first upside down coaster.
Right. Well, how about we get started talking about year 2019 at Kings Island? I know it was a great year for me. I enjoyed all the trips I took. I think I was at the park at least 18 or 19 days this season. So I was there quite a bit. Evan, you know how many visits you made this year?
I know that during the regular season, I made 74. And then after Haunt started, I kind of lost track. But I'm fairly certain it was over 100.
How about you, Robbie?
I believe I was around 26, 27.
Oh, okay, you guys both beat me. Well, I was busy, you know, engaged and getting married this past year, so things were a little bit hectic around the house, and I'm 2 hours away versus, you know, stop by the park on the way home.
Right.
Yeah, I didn't make as many visits early in the season because we had our second baby.
Right. So you had a baby this year, so it's kind of been busy for the KIC moderators. Well, let's rewind back to National Roller Coaster Day in 2018 when Kings Mills Antique Autos were announced. Was it a bad move to do it on that day? I think there was a little bit of confusion about them announcing it on National Roller Coaster Day. What do you think, Evan?
Yeah, I mean, I kind of agree with that. The I remember I was sitting at work watching the live stream, and they showed a couple shots of those people that, you know, had Son of Beast signs printed out, and they were all, that's what everybody thought it was, because that's the day they were doing it. But, right, you know, I get why they did it on that day, and, you know, I don't blame them for it.
Right. It's a, you know, kind of a national holiday for coasters and roller coaster enthusiasts. But that day coincided with the closing of the original Antique Autos. The original Antique Autos gave its last ride on August 16th, 2004. The very next morning, the construction crews started tearing up and began removing the attraction to make way for the Italian Job Stunt Track, as it was called at the time when it debuted under Paramount. So the announcement date had a significance to the park history, but most people coming wasn't aware of that at the announcement. So, you know, people that were coming were thinking, hey, it's National Roller Coaster Day. This means they're going to announce a roller coaster, when the park had an underlying reason for announcing it on National Roller Coaster Day. So kind of interesting tidbit of information. And it may have been kind of cool if that was more prevalent for the announcement, that, you know, there's something that disappeared on this day and it's getting revived, but that may have given away too much more than they wanted to. I don't know. What do you think, Robbie?
I would tend to agree. I mean, they never said they were coming out and getting a new coaster.
So right,
all the disappointment was kind of just in the internet hubbub and made up by people online and speculating that they're announcing it on National Roller Coaster Day.
Right. What do you think, Evan?
Yeah, I mean, I had no idea of the significance of that date. I mean, that makes it make a lot more sense to me. I kind of wish that I would have known that then.
Right. So let's just talk about the, now that the ride's here, when it got announced, there was a lot of, how's that going to fit in that area, in the old Flight Commander area? There's not enough room, and it's not going to be big enough. I know I went on Facebook Live a couple times and walked down the whole area of where it is now, trying to describe that how much area is going to take, and I don't think too many people got the concept of how much room it was going to take and how big the ride area was going to take versus what people thought in their heads. So now that the ride's there, what do you guys think of the spacing and the size of the ride?
Well, I think it's really cool, and especially as when those trees that have been planted kind of start to mature, it's going to get that that feel that the old antique cars had, where it's kind of more wooded. If you've ever been to King's Dominion's antique cars, that's very secluded. And,
right,
you know, that's one of my favorite parts about it. And I think that as time goes on, it's only going to get better.
Well, I thought with the spacing and size, I don't have a problem with the spacing and size. I know some people were talking about it's going to come out in the midway and it's going to make it congested down there. I don't think that, you know, happened at all personally. Down during haunt times when you got Urgent Scare down there open, it may make it a little more crowded than normal. I think it's more crowded for Windseeker than it is the autos, personally. But as far as the ride cycle time, I don't have a problem with it at all. Robbie, what do you think?
I think it's an adequate size. It's definitely smaller than the original. But the original, you have to remember, was actually two separate tracks that intertwined.
Right.
There was a side that faced Coney Mall, and there was a side that faced Rivertown, almost opposite of Diamondback Splashdown. Another thing that Evan pointed out was the trees. If you look back at some of the early history photos, which I think we have on our site, of the original antique cars, and look at the trees then, and then look at the trees right before the ride was taken out, it's amazing how much the trees grew in over those years.
Yeah, I can't wait to see Kings Mills Antique Autos look like the antique autos in front of Maverick. Because I feel like the track layout, you got the little bridge over the water on that autos at Cedar Point. You know, another 10 years, I could see those trees coming in, really mature up next to Racer there and really make that a little isolated area for the ride.
Yeah.
So what do you think about the theming? I know we talked about the trees, but we got all the signs up on the fence back there. You got the little gas station. You got two fountains, and you go over water a couple times. What do you think about that, Evan?
I love the theming. I love how many little Easter eggs that were put into that with all the signage and down to the license plates of the cars themselves. I mean, everything kind of has a hidden meaning. And, for me, that's the type of thing that I love. It's just those small details that make it super cool.
Right. They may not have built the big a track as they probably could if they went into another section of the park, but I think they totally made up for it with the theming. Like you said, the license plates, the signage to Zodiac, and some of the old attractions, Racer Radio sign. I really love the little bridge. Going through the bridge, I think that's a really nice added feature. And if you pay much attention to the gas station when you're going through there, there's little details inside there as well if you look in the windows. So if you haven't done that, next year when the park opens for the 2020 season, look in the little windows and see all the little oil cans and stuff that are in the windows.
Yeah, there's even a sign that's on the fence that's next to Racer that mentions the Peters drive training, calling back to the Peters cartridge factory that's down on the river, just very close to the park.
Oh, okay. I don't think I saw that one. Or if I did, I didn't, put two and two together.
Yeah. It says we make driving a blast, that's talking about their ammunition factory. It's pretty neat. Not a whole lot of people, I think, would get that one.
And don't forget that they painted a building right next to Antique Autos, too, with some of the past attractions.
Well, that's true. The old Kilmart building. Well, I guess it still uses Kilmart. Formerly was an arcade, wasn't it? Wasn't it arcade before it was
Kilmart? It was an arcade, yeah.
Okay. And then they made it Kilmart, and they just leave the building there all year. But they, that building definitely needed a paint job.
Yes.
So I'm so glad that they repainted that facade of that building, and it looks really nice.
Yeah, I think it looks 10 times better. I mean, it's very well done.
Absolutely.
And so, I know we're kind of jumping ahead, but the Antique Autos looked amazing at Winterfest as well.
Yes. Lots of decorations there, and we can get into more details when we get into Winterfest.
Yep.
Later in the podcast. Go ahead.
One of the other major park improvements that happened this year was a renovated and enhanced International Street with new paint jobs and new furniture. What are your takes on that, Evan?
I was very apprehensive when I first, heard that was going to be happening. I was like, oh, I hope they don't mess it up too bad. I don't want anything to change. But I'm really very happy with how it turned out. Aside from the few hiccups at the beginning of the season with the fountains and the lights and everything, I think that by the time the big part of the season kind of came around, everything just looked beautiful. It was exactly how it was intended to look. And I love the parts of those pavers that come out and you can get closer to the fountain than you ever could. That might be my favorite part of the whole transformation.
Yeah, I agree.
So what do you think about the actual fountain improvements?
I've got some experience with lighting design, and I know how difficult time code and getting that stuff synced to the music can be. And, props to them for working as hard as they did on it and getting all of that stuff right for the, nightly fireworks show. And I really do like the new fountains. It reminds me a lot of King's Dominion's fountains with how they're not quite pedestals anymore, but this one, it still looks really nice.
Well, and I think what some people need to understand is King's Island went out and said, hey, we want to redo our fountains. And no company today is probably going to say, let's put those pedestals back in and work with those. Because, let's face it, they were 70s designs, So if you go out and you ask a company, come in and redesign your fountain, what are you going to get? You're going to get what we got. This is 21st century, modern day fountains that you would get in Las Vegas or, some very nice hotel of some sort. This is what is available for purchase, I think. I don't think that putting the pedestals in was probably the best option for the park. I personally like the new fountains. Yes, I, you know, for nostalgia purposes, I do miss the pedestals. But I also understand that they were trying to modernize the fountains and make them work more with the fireworks show and do other things during the day as another feature for people to be entertained by during the day. So how do you do that? You modernize it and you get something that can do more with the technology that's out today. So for me, I understand that. So I enjoy them.
Yeah. And again, kind of jumping ahead to Winterfest, I love that they had the pedestals kind of still there in the lighting that they put in. I mean, they still had the circles in the middle of the rink that right. had, you know, those big, you know, they were just there. They was like having the pedestals again, except they were part of the Winterfest decorations. And I love that.
Yes, I agree.
And then so also, one of the other improvements is they expanded the International Street Bandstand stage, which I think it needed it because it was kind of a small stage before they renovated it.
I definitely think it helped for the performers to be able to get around and move because I think they were a little bit too restricted before, especially if you put instruments, you know, band equipment up there, then they were pretty restricted on how far they could dance and move and, you know, get around to entertain with their choreography. So I thought that was a smart move to do while they were in the process of renovating the International Street.
Yeah, not to mention that they upgraded the sound system there, which sounds, you know, awesome.
Oh, my gosh, that is a really good sound system now. When they were playing music last year, this past year, and coming down through there, I'm going, holy cow, that sounds amazing.
Yeah.
So then the last feature as part of the improvements was on the Fest House. And I didn't even know when this went away, but I'm glad that they took the time to restore it and bring it back. But it's the Glockenspiel in the front of the Fest House entrance in the clock.
Well, you know, these are the little details that people remember. You know, you got little kids that are going to walk up there. They're going to see the clock ticking and then the chicken dance play, and they're going to sit there and dance, and your parents are going to take pictures of them, and you're going to look through that in photo books. You know, I know everyone stores photos online now, so we really don't have photo books, but, you know, when people go through their photo albums, whether it be online or, you know, if they print out pictures, those are the memories that people are going to see. Not just, you know, we rode the beast, but, you know, we caught you dancing in front of the Fest House with the chicken dance. You know, those are the little details that just make those days special. So that really was an awesome thing for them to do. And those little details to me add just a little bit more to people's day when they're there.
Yeah. And I think it really shows the direction that the park is going with theming and kind of taking care of the park, which, you know, I really appreciate.
Yeah, I agree.
The only, and this is a very minor critique that I have with the renovation, is around the Eiffel Tower, they repaved all the pathways underneath the Eiffel Tower, mm-hmm. and they used asphalt. I wish they would have used like a concrete or something other than just the dark asphalt.
Yeah.
But that's very, very minor.
Yeah. Yeah, I can agree with that. Though I would like to see that asphalt be used somewhere else, if you know what I mean.
I think I know what you mean. So one of the other features that they celebrated this year was a big milestone birthday for one of their signature coasters. Of course, I'm talking about the Beast celebrating its 40th anniversary. And they brought back, again, keeping with the nostalgia, they brought the paw prints back on the paths towards the Beast. And they also repainted the cars to be featured the flame colors with the red, orange, yellow cars. What are your thoughts on that, Evan?
Oh, I love that. When I saw the first like announcement, like, oh, returning for the Beast anniversary, the cars are going to go back to their original colors. And, you know, they post a picture of the original trains, which I didn't even know until this year were four bench trains. You know, I just thought that, you know, they didn't have to do that. They could have just painted it red like they always do. And just like the paw prints, it's not something that they had to do, but you know, like what we just talked about, those are the things that people are going to remember. It's like, hey, what are these? Oh, these are the paw prints that lead you back to the Beast. You know, it's little things like that that I really think have a bigger effect than just, you know, somebody painting something on the path.
And it was also cool that they had that little photo op in front of the queue entrance where you could take your picture with the picture of the lead car, the train at 40th anniversary. And that goes back to like the Glockenspiel comment, is creating an area where guests can take pictures of stuff.
Yeah, the footprints are really cool. You see little kids, you know, putting their feet in it and jumping to one to the next. And
my son did that almost every single visit.
Yeah, two parents who have, you know, toddlers and up to 5 years old, they're going to do those little things. And, you know, having a 9-year-old and a 13-year-old, they notice things like that as well. And, you know, think it's cool, but it's not going to be as memorable as, you know, for the younger generation. But still, that's something that they're going to, it's going to be in the back of their mind, as the footprints that lead us back to the Beast. And it just adds that anticipation to get on the Beast. And once they get old enough to be able to ride it, then, you know, that's just going to make it that more special for them.
Right. I remember when I was a little kid, you know, just barely old enough to ride the Beast. And I remember the paw prints were still there. And, you know, I have that memory. And now that I'm older and to see them get brought back, you know, it's really cool for me. Because immediately when I see those paw prints, it takes me back to that memory of the first time I rode it.
Yeah, I agree. And I remember my first time. I got a little bit of a story here. First time I rode with my dad. I was probably 10 or 11. I've been able to ride it for a couple of years, but I was told it was too forceful and I couldn't ride it yet. So I finally got to be able to ride it with my dad, followed the footprints, got in line. We did, I don't know, probably half hour, 45 minutes to get on it, and went down that first drop. And oh my gosh, that was just amazing. I've never felt anything like it. And we're coming up, going through the woods. We're heading up to the second lift. My dad looks over at me and goes, "This is the second biggest hill, and it's bigger than the first one." And I just remember my eyes popping out of my head. Oh my gosh, that one's bigger, even though, you know, he was just pulling my leg. But that's a memory that has stuck into my head since then. It is my very first time on the Beast. My dad, you know, teasing me about the second drop being bigger than the first, although it wasn't. But man, that helix, that's a pretty darn big drop, and helix too. And very intense. So, you know, so those little things that lead up to memories that you have, and those footprints just add to that.
Yeah. The Beast was actually the coaster that kind of got me hooked on coasters. I was up at the park in October of 95 with some friends who had some extra tickets. And back then, the racer was the biggest thing I would ride, and I was scared. And they said, "Come on, ride the Beast with us." And I got on, and 2 years later, I got a season pass, and I've had a season pass ever since. So do you guys think that the colored trains are going to come back, or are they going to go back to that are all red?
Well, that's a good question. I would think they're going to leave them for a while.
I would hope so.
Yeah, I certainly don't see why they would revert, but you know, I don't know. I sure hope they will stay the way they are.
I got to say, I was not really a fan of the change, because I never saw them as the three colors before. They were always red, and I always just associated the Beast with the all red trains. So when I saw the KI blog post about them repainting them, part of me was kind of like, I was a little disappointed, but I got used to them. I gave him a chance, and the ride's not any different as far as the ride experience. But I got to say, at first, I was a little disappointed that they took away my all red beast trains, but it was all right.
I do like how it's easier to kind of tell people, like, where do you want to sit on the train? Oh, let's sit in the yellow part, or let's sit in the red part.
Yeah.
Yeah, that does make it a little easier, doesn't it?
Yeah. For people that don't know the row numbers, anyway.
Right.
Can't beat 6-2.
That's right. Well, I know we didn't have this in our notes, but I do believe Diamondback was celebrating 10 years, right, this year?
That is correct.
Because it opened in 2009, and yep. Then Banshee was celebrating 5 years.
Yeah.
And then wasn't it in Vertigo celebrating 20 years this year?
It is, yeah. It opened in Vertigo and Drop Tower.
So a lot of celebrations this year with coaster anniversaries.
It's the amazing. Water park is officially was celebrating 30 years.
Wow. I remember when Waterworks opened. I'm dating myself now.
1989.
Well, I would have been 8 years old.
Time flies.
Yep.
Feels like just yesterday Banshee was opening.
I know.
Yeah, I mean, heck, the visit that I mentioned earlier, my first time riding Vortex, I think was probably 2008, and that was when Diamondback was getting built. And I can remember looking up at those first couple lift supports. I'm like, there's no way. Who could ride that? And that was, you know, before I had even ever heard of Cedar Point, let alone something 300 feet tall.
Right. So, next thing we're going to talk about is Grand Carnival. Did you guys get to experience it?
Yes, many times.
I did, but not as much as I would have liked, because that was right around the time where our baby girl was being born. But I did make it up there one time.
Your priorities are wrong here, dude.
I know.
I got to experience it three to four times, I think. And for those who are listening and don't know what the Grand Carnival was, it was an international celebration of countries with a big parade. And they had some concerts going on and some other celebrations down International Street. So it was the big pizzazz of it was the parade that went around, and I don't remember how many floats there were. I guess I should look that up before we started, but there was at least 9 or 10 floats, I would think, if anyone else can remember. But it had really, really good theming. There's music being played on them, a lot of dancing, and not just people on the floats. They had walkers that were walking around besides the floats that were dancing as well, participating, dressed up in the different cultural attire. Anyone else want to add any more details?
There were 9 floats. They were custom built.
9 floats. Okay.
3DX located in Blue Ash, as well as Kern Studios in New Orleans, were the companies that handcrafted the floats.
And then the floats were just beautiful. I mean, there was just no other way to describe it. They were absolutely beautiful. And if you want to take a look at them, go to KICentral.com on our main page. And let me bring it up real quick. It's under past history because, well, it was last year. Oh, no. I'm sorry. It's under Park Guide Grand Carnival. And I've got hundreds of pictures out there and a little bit of a description. And a video that shows you the different floats in case you didn't get a chance to experience it or just want to look at some more pictures. But it's under the Park Guides Grand Carnival.
And there is also Don Helbig has a blog post on the Kings Island website from June 14th with a short video of how the floats were actually made.
Oh, cool. So what'd you think of the Grand Carnival, Evan?
Well, it was really cool. Partly because I knew a lot of the people, the that were actually like acting in it. So that made it pretty cool to watch. But also the theme was stuck in my head for probably a month after Carnival ended. So props to the guy that wrote that for making something that's very memorable.
And isn't he some, I can't think of his name, but didn't he like post a tweet or something about the soundtrack before we even knew we were getting Grand Carnival?
Yeah, and everybody was like, oh, is it going to be the theme to a new ride, you know, kind of like a Mystic Timbers soundtrack or something, but it ended up being for that, and it was very well done, I thought.
My kids absolutely loved it. I mean, I don't think they could have done anything different. They had the streamers they were blowing out. They were handing out the beads. By the time that they were done with the parade each night, they had a crew of sweeps going around to clean up all the mess from the streamers and stuff that they were throwing out, and which just made it really, really cool.
It was also cool that guests could actually ride on a couple of the floats. They could actually be in the parade.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, they had guests that were on one or two of the floats.
Yeah.
I don't remember how you got on the float, if you had to apply online or they just randomly picked somebody, but that was kind of a cool feature to add as well.
For sure.
And it will be returning in 2020.
We do not know when, though, do we?
I don't think there's dates. Just that Mike Coons did confirm at some point. I think it was at the Orion announcement that Grand Carnival would be coming back.
Right.
Which
It ran in 2019 from June 15th through July 7th.
I'm curious to know if they're going to, you know, change those weeks up to, you know, mix it up a little bit more and have it different weeks for other people who may not be able to make it those weeks to come, or, you know, it was so popular in those weeks they'll keep it. I don't know.
Right. I do know that Carowinds is adding Grand Carnival in 2020. I don't know if the other parks that had it this past year are bringing it back or not.
You know, I kind of figured it was more of a semi permanent solution or an attraction for entertainment when they put the storage bin behind Racer out there to store the floats. I kind of figured it was going to be a more of a, you know, multi-year attraction for the park.
Yeah.
And besides, who's to say? Oh, go ahead.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, who's to say? You know, down the year, it might not be a carnival, but maybe it's something that's, you know, similar. It has a parade and has floats, but it's not necessarily the same theme.
Right. Well, that's a good segue into what I was going to say. And back in the 2005 version of Winterfest, they had a parade in Winterfest, which I really enjoyed it. But 2005 was also the year that they had the Nickelodeon Celebration Parade, which was also a lot of fun. I would say that Grand Carnival's parade was a lot better than the Nickelodeon Celebration Parade, but just the energy that the parade creates in the park it's really electric, and you almost kind of forget about the rides that are there because you're so focused on the parade.
I totally agree with that. I mean, you're focused on the parade because there's so much to see on each of the floats and the entertainers on the outside of the floats, and they're handing you stuff, and the streamers flying out, and you're wanting to sing along to the songs and dance along with them. That whole parade coming through, you're immersed in that the whole time. So I don't know who came up with the whole Grand Carnival parade and entertainment on that, but hands off to you because it was really good.
Yeah, and who's to say you couldn't see it a couple times and see something new every time? Just kind of like Winterfest, you know, there was so much to see.
Right.
And one last touch on the Winterfest thing. Carowinds did introduce a parade at their Winterfest this past year.
We can talk about that more when we get to Winterfest. Segue there. Well, we're going to go a little bit fast forward here because we'll be running out of time here pretty soon. So instead of talking about the next part of the timeline, let's go to Vortex Removal. Since this is Evan's baby, let's talk a little bit about Vortex Removal. Now, a new grade was put out at Haunt last year, but at this point there was no sign out there. And we remember when Firehawk came down, there was a sign out there. Now I can't remember what the sign said. But this year there was no sign that went along with the grave, that made any indication that something was coming down. So when I took a picture for it, posted on KIC, I really wasn't sure if it was more decoration or if it really was a coaster coming down. And they left it pretty vague this year for this coaster. And I'm guessing that was done on purpose. But what are your thoughts on it, Evan?
So, you know, when Haunt started and I saw the grave out there, I was going to like, oh, that's just kind of the same thing as last year. There's no way anything's going to come out 2 years in a row. And that day that they announced it, you know, it was real early in the morning when they put out the press release. And I woke up to several text messages just saying, are you okay? You know, it was just, It was such a shock to me. I was like, there's no way it's this year. It got a whole bunch of work last off season, you know, a new compressor and new footings and everything. I was like, oh, there, it's still got some more time. So
right.
From then on, I was like, there has to be something more to this. It's getting renovated or, you know, something. But, you know, I could only hope. But that was a very emotional Haunt season for me. That's why I was there almost every day that Haunt was open, just to get as many rides in as I could.
Yeah, it was very interesting the time that they announced its removal. Like you said, the press release came out. I had read it on KIC from someone else who had posted it before I went and checked my email and had the press release in my email box from the park. So, yeah, I was quite surprised myself.
Yeah, stunned would probably be my word for it as far as my reaction to it.
Because at that point, there was a kind of radio silence. You had the grave there, but, you know, there wasn't any real clear clues that it meant a coaster was coming out, and maybe there was more there than I didn't notice and other people didn't notice. I don't know. I was kind of under the impression a flat ride was coming out. That was more of what I was thinking more than a coaster.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I don't think anybody would have expected 2 years in a row of having a major ride removed unless it was absolutely necessary.
And I don't have any inside information, but my gut from following the industry so long is that they found something that was going to be a very big ticket item to fix. And they just decided instead of paying the huge paycheck to get it fixed, they decided to take it out.
Yeah. I mean, if you need to invest $5 million in a 30-year-old aero coaster, do you do that? You know, where's the return on investment for that?
Yeah. And I think that's kind of what their dilemma was, is they either spend a crap ton of money to get it fixed or they just take it out.
Right. And that was kind of the things that I had heard, the kind of the underground rumblings was it just, it was going to be very expensive if they could to do it at all. And that was when the decision was made.
Yeah. I know the normal answer is it's at the end of its service life, but you know, there's gotta be a story behind it a little bit more than that on why they decided to take it out this year.
But right. I mean, if you look at some of the other Six Flags parks that had huge aero loopers like this, most of those Six Flags parks have removed them. I believe the only one that still remains is Viper at Six Flags Magic Mountain.
Right. Yeah, and you know, I remember thinking, like, why does Anaconda get to stay alive and my precious Vortex doesn't? That was one of my first thoughts. And, you know, because I'm not, as much as I love Vortex, I'm just not a fan of Anaconda. And so that was one of my thoughts. But, you know, that's in a totally different climate. It's had a totally different maintenance crew that was working on it. I mean, they had vastly different kind of life experiences. So I think it's kind of hard to compare, you know, even Viper to Vortex as far as its mechanical life.
And who knows, you know, the stressors on the steel may be different on that ride versus right. ours.
Exactly.
So many variables there. Right. But I get your point. It's like, okay, why is the one that I don't care as much still there, but my favorite is being dismantled?
Right.
So the last question would be, what's the outcome of the station? What's it fate at this point? Is it, do you think it's going to go, or do you think it's going to stay?
My best guess is that it will go, just because of the condition that it's in. You know, it's already served the original Bat and then Vortex, and it's, you know, that, so that would be 1982 or 83 that it was built. So, you know, it's pushing that 40-year mark.
And, right.
You know, I don't see it being viable for anything other than maybe a haunt maze for a couple of years until something larger goes in that space.
Yeah, I would tend to agree. I think it's going to get torn down. And that, I would even hesitate to say they'll use it for haunt for anything. I mean, it has cool architecture to it, but it's just not a very big station.
Right. As much as I will be in pain to see it go, I would agree. It is an iconic building, but it's only a memory now.
Yeah, I can't imagine it staying. And personally, I don't want to see it turned into a haunt building.
I would agree.
I'd rather it just be gone, not have to, you know, see it anymore.
Suffer that fate.
Exactly. We still got Son of Beast Station standing as a haunt building, and it's kind of out of the way. You really don't see it unless you're walking back towards the Bat and you turn your head to look at it. So it's kind of out of the way. You're not really going to miss Vortex Station when you're walking back by Backlot Stunt Coaster. It's going to stick out pretty good. So my hope is it's gone, but, you know, whatever they do, they do.
Right.
It's definitely going to be weird walking like by Backlot Stunt Coaster and towards Shake, Rattle, and Roll and not seeing Vortex or the station there.
You know, that was my favorite roller coaster to watch. I always thought, even as a kid, that was the coolest looking roller coaster. I love the look of the trains in the front. They were just very futuristic looking for me as a kid. And just watching that roller coaster was fun. That was a entertainment all by itself, is just watching that train go through that track. And I'm going to miss that a lot. It was one of the best roller coasters to take pictures of, in my opinion. It took a great picture.
And I love hearing it across the park, or sitting at the Rivertown, the Roses, eating a slice of pizza and hearing it roar by on that track above you.
And those aero anti-rollbacks as you're going up the lift. I mean, those are unmistakable.
Yeah, that's my one of my text tones is those anti-rollbacks.
I mean, even when you're in the B station, you could always hear it dropping down the first drop when you're in the station.
Yeah, truly an iconic part of Kings Island's history.
Yeah, and I still think it was one of the best drops in the park.
For sure.
Yeah.
If you were sitting in 7172 and you went down, we can suck down that drop, it got my stomach more than any other drop in the park, and it still did up until this year. I don't know what it was about that drop, because it's not like it was the steepest thing in the park, but it always got my stomach just in a unique way that I loved.
Yep. Yeah. And I ended the last day it was open, and you know, everybody was like getting in line, ready to be on the last train. It was just, it was kind of an outpouring of love from enthusiasts and just people that grew up with it to ride it one last time, which made me really happy.
Yep.
And everyone on KIC keeps asking, well, what are they going to replace it with? What are they going to replace it with? And the park says, we don't have any plans currently. And I think they're probably telling the truth right now. They don't have any plans, because I don't think they really anticipated yanking it out this offseason.
Right.
Well, if they did, they already had Orion, you know, in the process, and I can't imagine they're already in the design stages of a new coaster yet. Maybe they are. I don't know. They're probably thinking about what's next, but I don't know if they're, you know, they've already had manufacturers in and surveying the area and figuring out what they can do.
Right. I mean, it'll be a couple years, but I really hope whatever does go there can kind of surpass it and be everything that Vortex was and then some.
And if you would like to see pictures from the last day of it operating, if you go to the KICentral.com park history, and it's now under past attractions. Unfortunately, I moved it here not that long ago over to the past attractions. That was kind of a hard thing to do. And instead of having it just under the ride section, it's now in the past attractions page. But there's lots of photos and the last day pictures and videos under that tab. In that page.
The Monday after it closed, when I woke up that morning, the first thing I did was open up to the Vortex page on RCDB, and it said removed, and it just hurt my heart a little bit.
I bet.
And I believe I read somewhere that the trains for Vortex have found their way down to Carowinds.
Yeah, at least some of them.
Yeah, I think I saw some pictures of them at Carowinds. I wonder where the rest of them went.
I know some people spotted them on the highways going somewhere, but I don't know where they ended up.
Well, does anyone have anything else to add about the Vortex?
I don't think so.
I don't think so.
Okay, I think we'll wrap up this portion of the 2019 year in review because we're going on about 45 minutes.
Yep.
And stay tuned for the next episode, episode number 7. And we will continue the 2019 year in review with one of the bigger announcements that the park has made.
Well, all right.
Thank Evan for being on.
Yeah, I'm glad to be here.
All right. That's a wrap for this episode.
We'll see you next time.
Thank you for listening to the Kings Island Central podcast. KICentral.com is Kings Island's ultimate fan site. For more discussion about Kings Island and other amusement parks, join us over at KICentral.com.